Can't wait.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
It was a good game. Both teams play hard.
With no regard for human life.
To all the non-believers, all we hear is about their defense. They can't stop a nosebleed.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Not the game that I go out there and die for.
This is grown man B.I.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Relax and take notes.
Hello and welcome to Can't Wait, Tucson's best show in the history of recorded sound. My name is Nick Prevenis. Joining me as always are co-hosts Matt Milner.
Hello, hello.
And Rusty Boulay-Stevenson.
Howdy.
We've got a lot to talk about. This is a hot show. I'm not going to lie.
This is a very hot show.
Oh, my goodness. But we're going to start with the conference finals. Oh, wait, no, we're not, because they're just not competitive. We're looking at two sweeps.
Yeah, I mean, best case scenario maybe would be like a gentleman's sweep out west if the Rockets are able to pull it together and Josh Smith has a weird game.
I thought we would get the gentleman's sweep with them taking game three after looking kind of good.
Yeah.
You know, in those first two Golden State games. And then, so those series are kind of dealt with. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about all the teams that had nothing to do with the playoffs this year. That's right, NBA lottery. It's all been sorted out. All the orders have been established. Nothing that crazy happened with the lottery balls. The only thing that happened was the Lakers jumped up to 2, the Knicks fell to 4, and everything else stayed pretty chalk. So a lot of people have been talking a lot about lottery reform. This is not going to be a lottery that spurs on a lot of that conversation, but that doesn't mean we can't address the concerns. So the way that the NBA lottery is set up right now, do you love it? Do you hate it? What would you do, Matt Milner?
You know, I actually think that the lottery works all right. I know that there are critics of it on both sides. One of the criticisms is that it incentivizes tanking, and that's the one that you hear more often now because of teams like the Sixers, you know, more sort of transparently tanking. But then on the other side of the coin, what we've seen over the last several years is that you've seen teams like the Cavaliers benefit from just crazy, insane lottery luck, like the kind of thing that you could replicate the 4-year stretch in which they had the number one pick, you know, 3 out of those 4 years. You could redraw those balls a million times and you probably wouldn't come up with that.
Completely change the course of their franchise.
Absolutely. I mean, because they had been so mismanaged coming out of the LeBron era and managed to, mostly by luck, put themselves back into a situation where they were once again an appealing destination. So anyway, I think those two things sort of balance each other out. The reality is that even though tanking into that number one spot it gives you the best odds, 25% at the end of the day, those are not great odds.
And this is the first time in, I don't remember the number of years it's been, but the Minnesota Timberwolves had the highest odds of winning the lottery, and they actually won. Yeah, that doesn't happen very often.
Cleveland won LeBron, I think, was the last time that happened.
Yeah, they had the worst record in 03.
They had the worst record.
I remember tracking that pretty intently because the Denver Nuggets were right in the mix, and we ended up with Carmelo Anthony in that lottery, which, you know, it was a pretty fun 6 years, but the lottery had some personal attachments for myself, where my Nuggets ended up 7th. It's never the best place to be in a lottery, but we'll see how it goes. And Matt Milner's Miami Heat, they were in danger of losing that pick if somebody had miracle odds and leapfrog them, but where you're at, 10th?
Yeah, and I made a deal with my God that I would be happy. I wasn't going to get greedy and hope to jump into the top 3. I just wanted to stay at 10. Get that one late lottery pick, and then we'll be done with draft picks for the next decade.
So the lottery worked out okay for us, but Rusty, let's say you're an NBA GM. Do you have anything that you would want to see different in the lottery, or do you kind of like status quo right now?
The status quo doesn't bug me. I'm kind of with Matt on that. 25% chance if you're the worst team. The Sixers just showed. I mean, the Sixers get the 3 pick now, you know. I mean, tanking didn't really help them. And not only that, they won a lot of times when they were supposed to be tanking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, to me, it's not that big a deal. I I like, in fact, if I were going to change it, I kind of like the more random nature of it a little bit, because it, I don't know, it's fun, right? Like, that's one of the things that's fun about the draft and why we tune in and why we care about ping pong balls and
the introduction of chaos.
Exactly. The introduction of chaos is very fun to the draft to me, and I miss that a little bit. It's almost a little too defined now.
Yeah, usually where you see the most egregious examples of tanking isn't, you know, with the Sixers doing this extended teardown, it's a different conversation. Mm-hmm. The tanking occurs when you see, let's bring up the Mark Madsen game as an example. Right. I think that was that the Minnesota Timberwolves?
It was.
That needed they needed to lose game number 82 to hold on to, what was it, like the seventh pick?
Something
so they
like
sent Mark Madsen out there and he shot like 9 threes. Mm-hmm. That was ridiculous. That's egregious. There were other examples. I think the Golden State Warriors, who are currently in the mix to win the NBA championship, mm-hmm. they wouldn't be there if they didn't tank egregiously to keep the Harrison Barnes pick.
Right.
That's a key guy in their rotation. Had they won two more games, I don't think they end up with Harrison Barnes. I don't know who went after Harrison Barnes, but they don't have him, who is just kind of exactly ideal for the system they run now. Mm-hmm. But they lose that pick. That's what happens. And so what you see are these inflection points where teams are in danger of either losing their pick entirely or holding on to a key cheap cog that may determine the course of their franchise for the next 5-6 years. So that's where but I don't think lottery reform ever gets rid of that.
Right.
I don't think there's any inflection point that you can erase that completely makes it worth changing the system entirely.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only way to change the inflection points would be to eliminate protections on draft picks.
Absolutely.
Which I think would be a bad thing because they end up being an important part of deal making. I think you'd see less deals if
yes.
you couldn't protect picks. And that, just from both a team building and a fan interest perspective, I don't think that's a good result.
No.
I think the dream scenario, if you could start from scratch, and we've all agreed generally that what's in place now works and you don't need to
works-ish
take, yeah, yeah works-ish you know, we could talk about some of the alternatives, but I don't know if any of us agree that they're better. But I think if you were starting over, the one way that you definitively address tanking is you have a fully deployed D-League and you have a soccer style relegation system.
Amazing. I want to employ relegation into every major American sport. Yeah.
Now, so today we're recording this on Sunday. This morning was the last matches in the Premier League season. And for the last day of the season, all the matches take place at the same time. And you might think that that's just for drama, but it's also because of match fixing. Mm-hmm. They you know, there's some history there. But in any event, so today, you know, the Chelsea had already locked up the number one spot. The four teams in the Champions League spots had already locked that up. There was some jostling for the Europa League spots. But most of the drama was over which teams were going to get relegated. Two had been locked in, but then Newcastle and Hull City, one of the two was going to survive. So everybody's attention is transfixed on these two terrible teams, but they have so much to play for. And it turns into kind of the reverse of the tanking situation, where at the end of the year, teams, you know, fans are rooting for their teams to lose. Instead, you've got these teams that have been lousy all year, fighting and fighting and fighting as hard as they can, and their fans are into it, and it's because there are real stakes. So if the Knicks ran the risk of having to, you know, go down and replace, you know, the Sioux City Ants or whoever, then I think that changes team building.
Imagine if D-League games took place at Madison Square Garden,
right?
For wow. like an entire season. You know, the Mecca, all these great Willis Reed's jersey up in the stands with just the most random of random, you know, fringe professional basketball players occupying that space. That means you have to win. You have to play hard. You have to play your best guys. You have to try in free agency. It just, it's
and
the
New
ripple
York
effect.
Fans would love that. New York fans would totally turn out for that, I believe.
Dream come true.
Right?
I mean, you brought up last week, the Yankees have the worst road attendance right now. So, you know, those New York Knicks fans would split in an instant. So we know that whatever reform is going to come isn't coming right now. There was a proposal to try to flatten the odds a little bit to increase randomness among the middle of the lottery pack, but that's not happening. That's been voted down. What we have right now is the Timberwolves picking first. We have the Lakers picking second, the 76ers picking third, the Knicks picking fourth, and so on and so forth. So we're in a position now to kind of sketch out where we think these guys might go. We know that the guys at the top of the draft are now looking at this enticing, almost Sophie's choice of a place to end up, whether it's going to be Los Angeles or Minneapolis. What do you think is going to go on here at the top of the draft? Who do you think ends up where, Rusty?
Well, I have read that Okafor doesn't want to go to Minnesota.
Nobody wants to go to Minnesota.
Nobody does. No, especially if your choice is the Lakers. I mean, of course you want to go to the Lakers. If you're 19 years old, of course you want to go to Los Angeles and not Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And insult to injury, the Lakers used to be in Minneapolis.
Right.
That's true.
Just salt in the wound every single time with these poor Minneapolis basketball fans. Mm-hmm. But so to hear, I think that's a bummer. I don't think that can figure into who you pick, because the way the NBA is set up, you essentially hold those rights for 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
You just take who you think is best. You're Flip Saunders, and you, for some reason, have more influence and power over your organization than any coach except for Doc Rivers, Greg Popovich, Stan Van Gundy. I mean, you're a power broker. Mm-hmm. Who are you taking, given the way the rest of that roster set up with Andrew Wiggins? You've got Ricky Rubio. You've got Zach LaVine. Nikola Pekovic is still under contract for a couple years. Where do you go with that pick?
You got Deng as well.
Oh, Georgie Deng. I like him a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so I think Towns is where you go.
Karl-Anthony Towns.
I think it makes sense, right? He's the body that you need in the center. He's going to make for a great NBA player. He's got more upside than does Okafor, and so I think, anyway, I don't know, that's my, what I hear. I shouldn't say that I know that for sure, but that's my general sense of how it feels right now, and so I think they definitely go with Towns.
What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think Towns is a perfect fit for what they're doing there.
He can play both spots.
Yeah, he can play both spots.
The 4 and the 5.
So even if you can't move Peck this year, I think you can play them next to each other still. You can play him next to Deng in the future. I think with Okafor, I mean, he's a true 5, and he's locked in there. You can't you can't play him alongside someone like Pekovic.
Impossible.
Yeah.
If you draft Okafor, you're saying we are trading Pekovic, and we're putting ourselves in a position to not get a very good return on it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he certainly, right now, his stock is low. It's not a really favorable contract. But yeah, I think Towns would be a really fun pick. And in some ways, the Timberwolves are actually, I think, a great example of why the draft still works. That even though they had the worst record in the league this year, they actually really tried. You know, going into the year, they had these delusions that they were going to try to, you know, compete for a fringe spot.
That's why they traded for Thaddeus Young unsuccessfully and irrationally.
Right, yeah. And you can argue that that wasn't a very smart trade, or that it was unrealistic for them to think that they would be able to have all these young guys competing for a playoff spot. But there's no question that they tried to be as competitive as they could be while still developing their young talent. And they made what could turn out to be one of the best trades of the last decade in moving on from Kevin Love when they knew 100% he was going to leave, and got, you know, a franchise-changing talent potentially in Wiggins. They have a lot of young, rangy, athletic players. That becomes a fun league pass team next year with Towns.
Absolutely. And I feel like Flip Saunders, the way that he's wired, he wants to take the most NBA-ready guy, and that's Jahlil Okafor. Mm-hmm. I think that's a mistake. And I think giving somebody like Flip Saunders this kind of power sets yourself up for mistakes like Okafor over Towns, because Towns is ideal for what they need. They don't have a rim protector. They don't have anybody that can kind of stretch the floor a little bit at the elbows. I mean, Georgie Deng does a nice job of that, but he's already 23, 24.
Yeah.
I mean, he's limited. I like him as a third big. Mm-hmm. I love him in this big man rotation with Towns and Pekovic. And I just think that Towns is the can't miss home run, don't even think twice about it kind of pick. But I just can't shake the feeling that Flip Saunders looks at Jahlil Okafor and his 1987 post moves and his traditional, you know, used to work in the stone age of basketball ways. Mm-hmm. And that's not, I'm not trying to slam Okafor. I think he's a good player. And I think if he ends up with the Lakers at number 2, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Makes a ton of sense.
Because I feel like they want somebody that's ready to play today. They don't have anything at the 5, really. I mean, U of A's own Jordan Hill has been holding it down best he can, but I think Okafor makes a ton of sense for what they're trying to do.
That's an organization that likes a big man like that, right?
They've got this history.
They traditionally love it with Kareem and with Shaq, and so they've been looking for that for a long time.
Yep.
It makes a lot of sense.
Dwight Howard was supposed to be that, and you know, something happened there. We all know what happened there. Right. And so Okafor makes sense there, and it's not that inspired of a pick. It's not the kind of pick that would scream, we're going to contend for a title because we're the Lakers again. But I feel like Okafor is part of a bigger picture in terms of the kind of free agent moves that they would make, and that they would they're not going to be picking second again. They want out of this. Okafor gives them an opportunity to get out of the lottery with Julius Randle coming back and all the free agent money and appeal that they have. You got the Sixers third. Where do you think they go? That's kind of a nice breaking point in the draft. That's going to determine the way the rest of the lottery shakes out. So where do they go?
Well, I think that one thing that'll be interesting to see with the Sixers is I think that depending on whether they go Russell or Moutier will tell us a little bit about whether Sam Hinkie thinks that next year is going to be the year that they start to put the pieces in place and be more competitive, or whether they're going to, you know,
kick the ball down
for one more year. Because I think that Moutier is a really intriguing talent, obviously, but it's not like he's coming off a full season of Chinese basketball. He played, you know, a month of basketball, got hurt, and then that was it.
Yeah.
So the idea that he's going to be able to step in right away and, you know, compete as a starting level NBA point guard, I think that is asking a lot of a kid who's, you know, basically got 1 month of Chinese basketball between him and high school. So I think that Russell, on the other hand, as we saw in the tournament and throughout this season, he's someone who you can see right away how his skills translate. I mean, he's an elite facilitator. He's going to be a 15-point scorer in his first season. He can score off the dribble. He can shoot. I mean, he's somebody who projects right away as a starting level point guard in the modern NBA, who can kind of play in that combo guard type situation. I think if they take Russell, that's a sign that they're ready to start putting out their best pieces next year.
That says Embiid is healthy.
Yep.
That says we're going to try to bring Saric over sooner than later. We're going to start playing actual basketball.
Well, and isn't he an exciting pick, too, as he did make the run in the tournament? As he's kind of well-known as college players go now. He's one of the more well-known players. And so if they do go with that pick, that to me is telling their fans to be a little bit excited.
And they need that.
Yeah.
They need somebody that they can say he's definitely a good basketball player. They've rolled enough dice.
Yeah.
You know, Embiid is a huge dice roll, but I got it at the time that they made it. Saric was a dice roll. I got that individual pick. Like, each and every individual move makes sense, but collectively, when you're gambling all the time, you have to take a sure thing sometimes.
Yeah.
Moutier is the most Sixers pick here.
By far.
He is Westbrookian in nature. His athleticism is overpowering. But the way when Russell Westbrook came to the league, we didn't quite know where he fit. He just played hard. And he's turned that into one of the most compelling careers we've been witness to. But that doesn't always go that way. You have to be mentally tough in a very unique and special way to make it work the way Russell Westbrook has. Moutier might. He might. You might roll the dice on that. If you're the Knicks at four and that's who's left, that's the pick you got to make. But you're the Sixers and you've yet to bring in somebody that is identifiable as an immediate NBA performer. I think D'Angelo Russell might be the best player in this draft.
I agree. I like when I watch him, I see somebody who in today's NBA in a pick and roll oriented game can be 90% or 85% of a Steph Curry, you know, in terms of being able to be someone who is both a high-level scorer and a distributor. Or, you know, Westbrook, even though his style's a little different, same mold, too,
yeah.
Where, you know, you're putting him in at one, but not just because you expect him to be a Mark Jackson kind of point guard, but because he's going to be your leading scorer as well. And I think that with Russell, the funny thing is that Hinkie, despite the roster that they've rolled out, one of the things that we know about him, at least in theory, is that he really likes shooting.
He likes the analytics model of the at the rim.
Yeah.
or 25 feet away from the rim.
Yep, exactly.
And that's where Russell fits in.
Exactly. So, and if you draft Moutier right after trading Michael Carter-Williams, to me, that's running in place.
Yes.
And that's not to say that I think long-term Moutier is not better than Michael Carter-Williams, but the same issues that are going to inhibit him, especially in his first few years, are what you already dealt away with MCW, in that Moutier is not going to be a good shooter out of that. He's not a good free throw shooter, which also, you know, is troubling in terms of projecting his long-term ability to consistently shoot from the outside. Russell, you're already going to get a guy who has NBA range. He can shoot off the bounce. He can, you know, shoot, you know, as a set shot. I just think that Russell is the best long-term fit for them. And I actually think that they will go that way. Even though the Moutier pick does feel Sixers-y, I think they'll go Russell.
He's also the best asset. Too. I mean, if you're looking just at pure assets, if you were to poll the other 32, 31 teams in the league, who would you rather roll the dice on, Russell or Moutier? I think Russell's got higher value.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what Hinkie's doing, is value plays.
Yeah.
I think if Russell's there at three, that is easily the best value. And I think that's the closest thing that we're going to see to, let's say we had seen Manu Ginobili at 21.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what time did he come over to the NBA? 27? 28?
Like that. Yeah.
Imagine a young Manu Ginobili. I think that's kind of what we're seeing with D'Angelo Russell. So that's kind of what we think 3-4 is going to be. Russell, Moutier.
Yeah. I just want to say, too, with Russell, and just kind of building on what Matt said, as a GM, I would far prefer to go with a body type like Russell's over these great big 6'11", 7-foot guys. Those guys, as far as building a franchise around, a lot of times break down. They're dicier picks than a Russell, than a D'Angelo Russell.
They take longer to develop.
They take longer to develop. They're more likely to get injured. To me, Russell is a safer pick almost for anybody, but
that's
not how it's going to go.
You look around the league, and who are the most dominant? Who leads the league in MVP votes? Who are kind of the most pivotal guys on a roster? For every Anthony Davis, who is going to be the best player in the league, it's mostly wing guys. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where it starts now. Mm-hmm. That it used to start in the middle. Now it's kind of starting at the point and on the wing. And with D'Angelo Russell having pretty silly length for the position, pretty silly athleticism, he's a little slight.
Yeah.
But that's a function of being 19, I think, for him. I just see a guy that gets the pace of the game in a way that people his age don't typically get it. Moutier, I feel like, is just going to go 120 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't always work. You have to kind of figure out where to slam the gas and where to let up, which is where Westbrook took the leap.
Yeah,
I just feel like Russell is always under control. He's always thinking 2-3 passes ahead in a way that I haven't seen in a prospect of this age since probably Curry. That's why I like Curry so much, because it just seemed like he had that 26-foot pull-up weapon, but he used it in a way to bend defenses to think of second, third-level passes, and that's what I see in Russell.
I agree. I also think that with Moutier, and we've talked about this before, the appeal is the unknown.
Yes.
You know, they've seen him play for a month in Chinese competition, seen him play in high school, but there's so much more unknown about them. They don't have a full college season to pick apart his game. But if Moutier had played at SMU the way he, you know, had originally committed, I don't think he has a better season than D'Angelo Russell.
I don't either.
It's hard to imagine. D'Angelo Russell had a phenomenal season.
Yeah. 25-5.
Yeah, like crazy numbers. I don't think Moutier has a better year. I mean, now that's not to say that that's what should determine who's the better prospect. I just think that to the extent that we fetishize the unknown, I think that you have to always revert back to the context of thinking, well, based on what I don't know, what's still my best case scenario? What's what's tantalizing me that, you know, in terms of possibility? I think that a year like Russell had is still on the upper level of what you could have expected from Moutier. So
everybody that's pro Moutier is pro Moutier because they remember him in high school bullying the competition.
Right.
He was the best player in his class for a lot of scouts because he was so physically overpowering. Mm-hmm. Overpowering in a way that guards typically aren't. And the only comparison that you can throw out there is Westbrook, because the skills were not necessarily – it's not to say that he can't shoot, because he's okay. He's a good enough shooter for how much physically dominant he is over that level of competition.
Yeah.
But you can't necessarily always rely on physical overpowering when you're judging high school talent.
Yeah.
Because he's going against grown-ups now, and he's going to be in the, at the dealing with the speed that he hasn't dealt with, dealing with a physicality he hasn't dealt with, and whichever team he goes to, because I think it's between the Sixers and the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really going to have teammates that are going to help him put him in a position to best succeed.
Yeah,
he'll have Carmelo Anthony if it's the Knicks, but Moutier won't have to be the savior. But if he goes to the Sixers, who's helping him? I mean, he's going to be a man on an island. And I think your point, Matt, about a lot of the problems they had with Michael Carter Williams, they'll see him again.
Mm-hmm.
So I like Russell being able to make his teammates better in a way that Moutier just isn't ready to yet.
Yeah.
Well, if Moutier goes to New York, he's a compelling personality. He's a New York kind of player.
Yeah.
Very physical, very easy to root for, mm-hmm. just because of the way that he can get out and transition. He's very exciting. And he gives the Knicks a jolt of athleticism they don't have. What I think the Knicks might do, I think they might screw this up badly.
They always seem to.
Yeah.
But screw this up in a way that is not even Dolan-esque. I think they're going to screw this up in a pretty strongly Phil Jackson kind of way, where they're not going to take a point guard because their stupid triangle, their stupid antiquated doesn't work anymore triangle, the stupid antiquated doesn't work anymore triangle because of Tom Thibodeau.
Right.
They're going to go in a way with that fourth pick, they're going to leave the best player on the board because they think they don't need a point guard to run their system. Moutier is a slash and kick guy. That's not what the triangle does. I can see them going Porzingis. I can see them trying to figure out some high post weird way to go with this pick. I can see them going with Justice Winslow.
That's who I was going to say is Winslow.
I think he'd be great there in a Jimmy Butler sort of way. But I think Winslow is one of those succeeds regardless guys. Mm-hmm. But I think they leave the best player on the board because of their adherence to this philosophy that no longer works. We see Phil Jackson on Twitter right now railing against the three-point shot despite the Warriors are going to win the title.
Right.
That's one of my favorite tweets of all time. Goink?
Yeah.
I can't even say words anymore. I'm just already mad at what the Knicks are probably going to do. So I feel like that's another inflection point in this draft that could just send it into total chaos because they reach for somebody to fit a system that doesn't work in today's NBA.
See, I think if they keep the pick that they'll still...
Oh, that's right. They might trade the pick.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think that if they keep the pick that they probably will stay chalk and get one of those top four guys. But I think that there's a really good chance that if there's a trade out there that lets them bring in, you know, a veteran who's already a starting caliber player, I think that they pull the trigger. And I don't know yet what trade would be out there. It's hard for me to imagine, you know, just when you think about who's going to be available, who folks are trying to move. But, you know, let's bring your nuggets up, okay? Because they've got a lot of interesting pieces, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of pieces who are probably going to get traded, right?
I hope so.
Yeah. Do you, if you're the Nuggets, do you trade your 7 pick and one of your pieces to move up into that 4?
I've already thrown out a number of fake trades to get to that 4.
Yeah.
Because in the slight chance that D'Angelo Russell's there, oh my God, dream come true.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like 7 and Gallinari for the 4. Send him back to New York. That might get it done.
They loved him there.
Yeah, but that was with D'Antoni. I don't know what Phil and Derek Fisher think of him. But I would even do the 7 in Nurkic.
Wow.
I would absolutely. I mean, I think this is the highest you could possibly sell on Yusuf Nurkic. Mm-hmm. I like him. He was the only fun thing we had last year. But what is he really?
Mm-hmm.
If we're able to package the 7 in him to move up to the 4 and get a real franchise-changing kind of guy, where at 7, we're kind of sifting through Stanley Johnson, one of the overseas prospects, whether it's Porzingis or Hinosa. I think we can get a good player at 7, but I think we can get a great player at 4. And I give up anybody on the roster right now. I would give up Ty Lawson. I would give up Wilson Chandler. I don't think the Knicks take Ty Lawson. I think the Sacramento Kings are taking Ty Lawson. But that's I could go off on a whole Nuggets thing here, and we're already pushing the limits of segment number one. But I feel like the Knicks could absolutely deal that pick and screw it up badly.
Of course they could.
Yes.
One question for the group that I was thinking about based on what you were saying about Moutier, and I agree that in high school, you know, he was physically imposing. If the roles are reversed, Moutier spends a year at SMU. Stanley Johnson goes over, plays a month in China before getting hurt. Do you think that we're looking at sort of a reverse of their draft stock? Do you think that Stanley Johnson, after a year in China, or, you know, a month in China, really, do you think that he's still in that top five conversation?
I don't think so. I feel like Moutier was slightly higher regarded among high school scouts. And I feel like there would already be enough questions at the combine measurements and the kind of things we've already kind of discussed about Stanley Johnson, where Moutier already is massive for the spot.
I feel like
Stanley Johnson would still have a lot of questions to answer.
That's a fair point. I kind of trust Nick on that. I tend to think that you're probably right. Though there is that comparison, and again, how much does the unknown matter? And it does matter. I mean, that's why people like the lottery a little. I think real quickly we should talk about the Suns trade, as the Suns are our state team.
Oh, yeah. Because now that we talked about this off mic a little bit, little secret for the listeners, sometimes we talk about stuff when we're not recording.
Sometimes we prep.
Yeah, absolutely.
So not today.
Yeah, we prepped-ish. So what we're looking at with that trade now, the three-teamer at the deadline that was just total chaos, where the principal pieces... Michael Carter-Williams went to the Bucks. Brandon Knight went to the Suns. That heavily protected, or not heavily protected, but like strangely protected Lakers pick that the Suns had that was super valuable at the time, they made a gamble that it would not fall out of the top five. Because at six, it conveys to whoever. That's where the protection lied. Top five this year and next year?
I think next year it went down to top three.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was a calculated gamble that the Lakers would get to keep this pick this year, and that they would make enough changes in the offseason where that pick would not be as valuable in 2016. Pretty smart, you know, calculated gamble. But is that enough that you're going to now have to sign Brandon Knight as on a restricted free agent deal? Do the Sixers do that trade again, knowing what that pick might be? Do they keep Michael Carter-Williams? Does Michael Carter-Williams just continue to slide into inefficient mediocrity with the Sixers? Does he ever become what he is now with the Bucks without Jason Kidd seeing some weird version of himself in him? There's a lot of things to consider with this trade now. So who won that trade? Is it still too early to say?
It's probably still too early to say. Milwaukee certainly comes out looking pretty good in it. They move Brandon Knight.
Yeah. Then they don't have to pay Brandon Knight.
They don't have to pay him. Exactly. And that leaves them with room to maneuver. They get Williams, who fits into their system fairly well, like you pointed out. And I think Williams, the Sixers kind of lose, right?
I don't know. The Sixers never lose because Hinkie set up a system where he can't possibly lose because it's always 2 years down the line. But I feel like Milwaukee gained an identity, whether or not Michael Carter-Williams ends up fulfilling whatever his NBA destiny is. He has brought in, like, he's accentuated what they already are. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
I think that long term, he was not going to be a good fit for what the Sixers wanted to do. I mean, we already talked about the fact Hinkie's an analytics guy. You know, he wants somebody who at the point guard spot who's going to be able to consistently hit three-point shots. And I think that MCW, on his best development trajectory, he doesn't become that player for a very long time, if he's ever there. I think you hope that he becomes at least a guardable player at, you know, the three-point spot, so that your gravity doesn't like totally collapse when he's out there. But next 3 years, he's not going to be someone who's consistently hitting in the 35-36% range. So, from the perspective of moving an asset while his value is still high, coming after his rookie of the year campaign this year, who's healthy, he's still putting up good counting stats at least. So, I think that every team, and this is a cop-out answer, but I think every team won given what their short and long-term goals are.
Right. Every team fulfilled what they sought out to fulfill. Mm-hmm. Nobody got ripped off yet, but nobody, the pick didn't fall in a way for the Sixers to have hit a home run.
Yeah.
Certainly not. And the Suns, in moving that pick, I see the Lakers now as a fringe playoff team next year, probably. I mean, with free agent signings.
That's their goal.
That's their goal, is fringe playoff. Yeah. You can sign a couple people, maybe get them to play with Kobe one last time.
Yep.
I see the Lakers next year as a horrible train wreck.
Oh, great.
You're pinning a lot of hopes on Kobe's Achilles at an age where that doesn't heal.
No.
That, you know, the thing about this is the injury that derailed Wes Matthews. This is an injury that completely changed Dominique Wilkins' career.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is not something that you say, like an ACL, I'm out for 9 months, medical science has kind of figured out how to deal with this, I'll be back. The Achilles is a different deal. And Kobe, at his age, with his stubbornness to remain, in his mind, 28 years old, and he can still occasionally do the things that made him a first ballot Hall of Famer, mm-hmm. but can he do it over the course of a season to win 47, 48 games? Is that good enough? Is he going to be the kind of guy that young guys like playing with? Henry Abbott at True Hoop wrote that in-depth article about how many free agents just cross the Lakers off the list until Kobe retires.
Yeah.
Mm. So do free agents come there knowing that Kobe's only got a year, maybe two, and set up shop on one of the... It's still one of the great franchises in sports.
Sure.
It's just run like a disaster right now by people, like legacy kids who didn't deserve to own the thing in the first place, and being held hostage by a guy nearing 40 who is not what he thinks he is. So...
At least the last time we saw him. It could be... An Achilles injury is something that is... I mean, it changes your mindset probably to some extent. I know Kobe is...
He's a different
an indomitable
dude.
Ego. Yeah. Nothing's going to...
He's a different dude.
Even an Achilles, he is a different dude.
I see Kobe nice having a year where he will feel like he had a good year. He'll score 21 points a game.
Shoot 40%.
Yeah, shoot. Yeah. If that, yeah. He'll shoot 40%. I think he'll have, you know, 20 points on 26 shots, basically. And
still just, running that caveman Byron Scott nonsense.
Yeah. And I also think that when you think about the free agents who have been rumored as being tied to the Lakers.
Kevin Love, Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, Rondo, obviously, I mean, who knows what's going on there now after what happened with the postseason. But even Kevin Love, I mean, they've got Julius Randle already. If Okafor is the pick, a Love-Okafor front line.
It's the worst defensive team in the NBA.
Yeah, that's a catastrophe.
It's so bad.
That's a fair point.
So, and then with Kobe just trying to limp around out there, still probably playing too many minutes, frankly. Jordan Clarkson's a nice piece, but...
He's okay.
Yeah, he's...
He has been overrated by
because
virtue...
he's a Laker.
And by virtue of having all the minutes to do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah. But he's somebody who, you know, he will be an NBA rotation player,
yes,
at least.
That's a good player.
Yeah. But anyway, but we'll have a whole Lakers episode at some point as we get closer to free agency, but it's hard for me to envision a scenario in which they get the right combination of utilizing their draft pick and attracting elite free agents such that their roster makes sense next year.
I'll pose a question to the group here and to the audience listening right now to think about as we go to break. Is the ideal Lakers team with Kevin Love, Rajon Rondo, Jahlil Okafor, a healthy Kobe Bryant, Jordan Clarkson, and whatever pieces they can fit together, is that better than the Utah Jazz?
Well, that's a good question. I think Utah's probably better than that team, right?
I think that if the Jazz are healthy and they've got a full season of Gobert as a starter, as one of the best defensive centers in the league, I think you take the Jazz.
Yeah.
So
that's a fair point.
The Sixers might get this fifth pick in the 2016 draft. Hinkie wins again. That's going to do it for segment one here on Can't Wait. Hang around while we talk about some surprise silly topics later on Can't Wait.